Campsite Media.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Infamous This Week. I'm Vanessa Grigoriadis.
I'm Natalie Robomet.
And this week we are going to do something very topical, which is discuss P. Diddy, Puffy, the man whose name is on everybody's lips due to some extremely serious allegations that have been brought against him in various courts of law. The federal government raided two of his homes in Miami and Los Angeles.
The Department of Homeland Security conducting a raid at a house believed to be connected to Sean Combs, the rapper and music executive, perhaps being linked to a sex trafficking investigation.
And it's all looking like it's going to result in a quite serious case against him, potentially like the Harvey Weinstein case. So obviously, P. Diddy, I mean, I don't know, whatever name you want to call him, he's been around in pop culture for like 25 years now. But I don't know, Natalie, what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think Diddy first came to my consciousness from Making the Band, that reality show where he was sort of like the super producer putting together this girl group or whatever. That was really all about his mythos of like, oh, he's this hard to please record executive. And there were all those tales of like, oh, he hired somebody just to hold his umbrella. And then when I was working at Forbes, I went to this Revolt TV party and I remember Diddy came out with Drake and he was wearing this giant fur coat. But I mean, what's your association with Diddy?
Well, I mean, I do think that he pales in comparison to Tupac or Biggie or all the other people that he was associated with. But he did, in a lot of ways, blaze a path in terms of rap as a success story, The Great Gatsby, the idea that he was like going to take his money and fame and make it into a synonym for racial justice, or he's like an American success story. He really did mainstream that culture in a way that I think is very, very impressive. And I did go to his white party in the Hamptons.
Wait, when?
I was following around Donna Karan. So that makes you realize how long ago it was. I just remember that I met Lil' Kim and I was really excited about that because at that time I was super into her.
I cannot believe that you got an invite to a white party.
I mean, I was like the guest of the guest, but yes, I did get to go.
This was like one of the hot tickets, right? For like anybody who doesn't know or doesn't remember, in the 2000s, it was like this exclusive party he would have in the Hamptons every summer where everybody wore white, which I guess feels really schlocky. Like, was it tacky? I don't know if you thought it was tacky then.
I think it was more like Greece, a windy night on like Cyprus or something. It was lots of people wearing white on the top of this cliff with like a very, very modern white house behind it and everybody sort of sipping champagne. You felt very windblown and like all the most important people in culture were there. Like it was like Donna Karan and Martha Stewart and Lil' Kim and Andre Harrell, but it was a multiracial crowd. Not like your normal Hamptons crowd. I mean, back in the day, the Hamptons had private clubs that didn't take Jews, right? So he cracked open a lot of that stuff. Sean John, his fashion line, also was like a thing. He was at the center of something. Like, there's no question about that. And back in the early 2000s, it was not like a foregone conclusion that if you were a rapper, you could cross over and have Yeezys, right? Like, and, I mean, you could argue that Kanye was another person who definitely pushed things.
So did Jay-Z.
Yeah, so did Jay-Z. I think the fact that Puffy is a historic figure, like a legendary figure, is part of what is making these charges so sticky and memorable and also explosive, because this guy represented so much more. And, you know, it was like the representation of the good life, right? Like, I'm Puffy. I live the best life. You want to have my life. And it's all furs and chains and women on each arm, but very cleaned up and not a lot of oh, and behind the scenes, we've got a bunch of guns here. You don't have that feeling with Puffy, particularly because the one big crime that he was involved with, the Club New York shooting.
With J-Lo.
Right. So in the 90s, J-Lo and he went to this club, and they were the it couple of the moment. And somebody got shot. And who did it? And the person who said that he did it was this guy named Shine, who was much younger, much lesser rapper.
Signed to his label, right?
Signed to his label, exactly. There were always rumors that it was Puffy's fault. There were always rumors that Shine had taken the fall.
What I remember most about that J-Lo and Diddy case was she really stood by his side. And I think what's coming out in some of the allegations now is the question of like, whether these people were standing by his side or being forced to.
Right, exactly. Because a lot of the allegations are basically as far back as the 90s, him assaulting women, some at like 17, drugging them, rapes. I mean, really absolutely disgusting stuff. And then, of course, Cassie, who is his girlfriend of a long time, had filed a lawsuit. This is all under a law in New York that allowed a lot of victims to come out in the past year, even if statute of limitations had passed on their cases. So, boom, suddenly Cassie, back a couple months ago, said that she was emotionally, physically controlled by him, that she was really made to have these freak-offs, these sex parties with men that he brought in. Just basically makes it sound like a coercive, fetishistic sex party.
Some of the worst allegations are like, she tried to leave him or break up with him, and then she alleges that he raped her in her home. She alleges that he beat her, asked her to carry a gun for him in her purse. She accused him of blowing up Kid Cudi's car. She accused him of dangling a friend over a 17th floor balcony. And for those who don't know Cassie, I mean, she's probably best known for, I don't want to say this in a derogatory way, but the one-hit wonder of like Me and You. So she signed to Diddy, I believe, when she was 19. He was 37. And a relationship very quickly developed. So yeah, she filed that lawsuit, which was a civil suit, on November 16th. Diddy denied everything in it, but a day after the filing, he settled.
Yeah, and we should say that he's basically denying all these charges. But the next group that came were from this guy, Lil Rod, who's a producer on his Love album, who's been around more currently, right? And he is saying that Diddy has hidden cameras in every room in his house. He has some secret recordings that could be like collateral or something, and making allegations about Cuba Gooding Jr. fondling him, and essentially saying that this is like an illicit criminal enterprise that Diddy is running. The house is full of guns and sex workers, and sex trafficking is somehow creeping into this. So, you know, while we don't have the whole story about Diddy, what we decided to do this week, in addition to just catching you up on all that, is speak with a very close friend of mine. And oddly enough, she forged a relationship with the love of Puffy's life, who was a woman named Kim Porter, who was a model, a debutante. She was from Georgia, and she was with Puffy for many, many, many years. She was a mother of several of his children, and she unfortunately passed away very recently as well. And so we asked her to talk to us about what she knows about Diddy and that relationship with Kim Porter. What did you think of her? Like, your first impressions?
Freaking cool. Just, like, incredibly cool. Incredibly beautiful. She has this air of just, like, a queen. The way she spoke was really Southern. And she was, like, ridiculously gorgeous, but also ridiculously hilarious. And just really down to earth.
So she's from Georgia, and she was a model and a debutante.
Yeah, she was.
Right? And she had an acting career.
I mean, I think she was more of a model than she was an actress. She also loved to sing. She was working for Andre Harrell or something, and then met him during that time.
And so what did she tell you about Diddy, who, when they were together, was called Puffy?
I mean, she always referred to him as Puffy. She obviously had kids with him. And just so you know, this is the first time I'm talking about something like this in public. Her daughters are great, and her sons, Quincy and Christian, are awesome. but you know, there's a lot out there right now. It was hard. It was really hard, but at the same time, they were very, very good friends. He relied on her. She used to come over like all the time on her way over the hill, because she lived in the valley and I lived on the hill, so she would stop by. And anytime she was over, whether it be an hour or 5 hours, like, he was blowing up her phone the whole time. And it took a couple of years for me to understand the dynamic.
So they're not together though at this point.
They're
right?
not together, but it was almost like they were together, if that makes sense. Like, they weren't together, mm-hmm. but like every Christmas was her and the kids on a yacht, him, nobody else is allowed to come. Every Thanksgiving, she'd be cooking. So it was very family. Family was really, really mm-hmm. important to her. And she really tried to keep it together. But I didn't like the dynamic of what I was seeing. Like,
so did you talk to her about it?
Oh, yeah. We talk about it all the time. See, Kim was very generally a private person, but we just became really fast friends. And we connected. She was also really deep, spiritual, had like a deep belief in God, and knew that she could trust me, essentially. And she was like almost stuck with him. Like, if she was seeing somebody and he got a whiff of that, somehow she wouldn't be seeing that person anymore. And it wasn't based on something she did. It was based on something he would do.
Like, what do you mean by that? Like, somehow call the person?
Yeah, she was seeing this basketball player for a while. And then the basketball player was seeing another singer. And the singer said, hey, let's be exclusive. And he said, no, I'm seeing someone else. And she said, who? And he said, Kim Porter. The singer went to Puff. And then next thing you know, the basketball player never calls again. But she helped him a lot. He would use her as like a sounding board, almost like his rock in a weird way. She loved him. But she basically said to me, he's changed. She's not the same person that he used to be.
Because they were together from like the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Till like 2007. Or
yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
But he,
it's a long time.
Yeah, but he pulled a lot of shit. Like, when they were together, when she thought everything was amazing, next thing you know, the whole Jennifer Lopez thing comes out. And then the whole time he's with Kim, it's like from the outside, he was showing something different, got away from that, but she couldn't quite get away from. I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of stuff after she transitioned, a lot of stuff came to light that almost I feel like she was kind of hiding in mm-hmm. a way.
You mean transition after she died?
Yeah. And, yeah. you know, a lot of stuff mm-hmm. came, because I remember once we went shopping and it was like a YSL jacket or something. And I was like, oh, yeah, you should get that. And she's like, no, I can't get that. And I was like, why? Just have Puff buy it for you. And she looks at me, she goes, it does not work like that. And I was like, what do you mean? And then I realized, like, in order to get anything out of him, she had to, like, do something in return, whether it was spend time with him or whatever. It's like he was what looked like generous from the outside, but in reality not.
Didn't he come over to your house or something and say, like, oh, you're into this spiritual
yeah,
shit?
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah, yeah. She was, he was supposed to come over on a Sunday. And then he flaked out and she was like, no, I want you to hang out. He didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that Kim was ride or die for him. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, just leave. Like, he offered her $1 million once. Like, he could feel that she was disconnecting from him. And he like called her like crying, hysterical, please, I can't, don't, Kim, I'll give you $1 million. I'll give you $1 million. And then when she said that to me, I was like, all right, I'm going to get you an attorney. Let's get an attorney. Let's get this signed up. And she was like, no. She never, mm-hmm. like, she should have just gotten that money, but she never did. When I tell you she was so ride or die, like, there's, like, rumors on the internet saying, like, Kim Porter was writing a book. She wasn't writing a book. Vanessa, she was, like, loyal to the bone. Like, she was not that kind of person. She wasn't writing a book about Puff. If she was going to write a book, she would have written a book 500 years ago and not dealt with his ass. You know what I mean? She was never, ever in a million years going to write a book about him.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
What about all this crazy sex stuff, though? Did she tell you that there was, like, evil stuff going on with sex at his house? Did you have a sense of it?
I knew that she had, like, some weird suspicions. For example, the Cassie thing, because, you know, Cassie is who he was claiming on the outside. But when I would see how he would, like, blow her phone up all day long, I was like, I'm so confused because I'm seeing what's really happening. And I said to her, like, what's up with this Cassie chick? Like, do you like hate her or what? And she was like, no. He's not the same person he used to be. So like he changed. And so it's really hard when you fall in love with someone and they're like your person. And then all of a sudden that person switches on you. Like there was not a chance in the world that she was going to be able to get married, be with another man, just not a chance in the world. Like it was never going to happen. So I was under the impression like, oh, okay, he must be giving her a ton of money. And then when I realized that like half of the jewels that she had weren't bought by him, you know, Kim was a lady. Like I said, she was old fashioned, Southern, cook breakfast in the morning, feed the kid, you know, and I didn't like that he would almost like booty call her. It's almost like she was like his light side. Does that make sense? Like she was
Kim, you mean?
Yeah. She was the light, right? Family, and she was keeping everything together and making, she was keeping it together, which is why he imploded, right? It all made sense. Kim was strong as hell, but he messed with her spirit. He messed with her heart. I remember once we were listening to this song by Ernestine Anderson, and it was called Don't Touch Me.
Don't touch me. Keep your hands to yourself. Don't touch me.
And it's about how a man cheats. And one of the lyrics is like, I'll never be your spare or something.
I will be your one and only, but I sure won't be your spare.
And like, you could tell she had like tears in her eyes. He was just stealing her light.
And so basically she died of a completely strange freak thing. Like what happened?
She and I were supposed to go to Palm Springs. And then she calls me that day. She's like, I can't go. I'm like, why? She's like, Puff called. Like he wants me to go to the Turks and Caicos. And she's like, I gotta go. And I was like, okay. And she went. And I remember seeing a photo from one of his other, let's say, women in the same place, like 2 days before. And I was just like, ugh. And I was just like, so, ugh. But I didn't say anything. She sent me a couple message photos, et cetera, of her there. It looked beautiful. She came back and she was like, oh my God, it was the best trip ever. And like everyone's saying how like Puff is doing so well and he's like in such a better place. Cause it was all about what kind of place is Puff in? Like, is he in the light or is he in the dark? Like that was basically like the constant like, oh yeah, he's back to normal. He's back to himself. But what was weird is that something about her was kind of off. Like, so he's good, but suddenly she's not, you know?
Right.
And then it was his 50th birthday and we were supposed to go to the party together. And she had like called me three times being like, you're coming, right? You're coming, right? Because at the time I was like doing Lashify. I was super busy. I was antisocial. And I'm like, I'm coming, I'm coming. Mm-hmm. And then the day of the party, she never called me. And I was like, that's weird. And then I called her and she's like, the girls came in town. And I was like, okay. So that's kind of weird. And then I remember seeing pictures of her at the party and I'm like, yo, this like doesn't even look like her. Like something's weird. And then through a few days later, she's really sick. And she's like, oh man, I have this like crazy flu. And I called her, I'm like, what's up? And I remember she was like, I'm so sick. And that's how she sounded on the phone. And I was like, Kim, why do you sound like that?
Yeah.
Like, this was somebody that would be like, she was like, her voice had a melody. She'd be like, hey, hey, hey. And like, she sounded like this like guttural, weird sound. And I was like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on? And so then I remember I texted her, I don't know, the next day. And I'm like, Kim, are you okay? And she goes, Kimberly down. Is what she wrote in the text message.
Yeah.
It's like weird. And then the next day she was gone.
Oh my God, yeah. Seriously? Whoa.
So honestly, I mean, Vanessa, what I thought it was like, this is like a spiritual death. Like some shit went down. And then next thing you know, yeah, that was the first time ever he actually put it out there that this was the love of my life. That part was true. That was the love of his life.
You mean after she died?
But he turned it into like the biggest PR thing of all time. But it's the first time he said, no, this is the love of my life.
Yeah, like he said, I don't know what I'm going to do without you, baby. I miss you so much. We were more than best friends. We were more than soulmates. We were some other shit. And I miss you so much. Super black love.
Whatever, man. Whatever. He had completely disrespected that black woman. And I remember once I asked him, I was like, do you think he killed Tupac? She's like, no way. No way. She goes, trust me. No way. And I'm like, you sure about that? She was ride or die for him. She was ride or die for him. I remember like they were supposed to go to like it was the Christmas holiday and that Christina chick that is his right hand. She was like, what's going on with the flights? What's going on with this? And like Christina's like, oh yeah, we're not sure yet. And she like went crazy on Christina. She's like, I don't know who the fuck you think you are. You better tell that meaning. Like basically it's like the Christmas holidays. It's like, get your shit together, bro. And the thing is from her end, she kept saying to me, he can't stop partying. She said to me, the issue is he doesn't want to grow up. And it's like about the party, the lifestyle, the party.
Right.
And I think that that's what she thought, is that it was about the party and the lifestyle. Yeah, yeah, you know, let's drink, De Leon, Ciroc, whatever. It was a lot more twisted.
Yeah.
But he wasn't doing that shit in front of her. Hell to the no. Like, no way.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So what happened at her funeral?
It was a real blur. I got really weirded out because it was kind of like a popularity contest. Like some lady from Real Housewives was sitting in the front row. The whole thing was like so bizarre. And then it was an open casket. And when you looked at her, man, it did not look like her. And I remember one of her friend's moms was standing next to me and we're looking at the casket and she looks at me, she goes, that ain't Kim. And I was like, that ain't Kim. It was really dark.
Her life force was gone.
Yeah. I'm telling you, some weird, and like, I know there's rumors of like, oh, he killed her. I don't see why he would, unless he had some life insurance, but I don't see why he would. I don't think so. But at the same time, I hate to say this, but like when she passed, man, I felt relief for her. I felt relief.
Because she was away from him.
Because she was away from him. And she could kind of like guide her daughters. Her daughters like spinning images of her. And like they have her fire. They're Sagittariuses. They don't give a fuck. I think they know who their dad is. When Kim's mom passed, like she was so devastated when her mom passed that it's like that was her life force, if that makes sense. And when her mom passed, she got really depressed. That was like her way of dealing with the craziness of him.
After she passed away, because he was sort of, whether he was in that relationship for control, I mean, it was a grounding.
It was grounding. It was 100% grounding. But I do want to tell you that like no way was Kim having freak offs. Like no way. And so it all kind of makes sense to me though in a little bit, because you know how like the narcissist has like the woman that's like the one that makes him feel pure and clean. So I think that's what Kim was. Kim was like the front, the face.
You mean the way narcissists, like they work a bunch of different girls, but they have the one like wifey girl?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The one that's like the good one, the one that's like, even though they weren't together, but they were together. Like, I don't really know how to explain it. Like, it was like she had a husband. I'm telling you, if she came over to my house 50 times, 50 of those 50 times her phone was blowing up and it was him. This was constantly, but she had to play the game.
Kim died of pneumonia at 47 years old in 2018. So we don't know exactly what she would say about this moment and the trouble Diddy is in. But we do know that she was involved in what sounds like a complex relationship where, according to Sahara, Diddy exerted a lot of control. We wanted to share this story this week because it's the thing people are talking about in pop culture right now, and we wanted to get something quick to you. But next week, we'll be back to our regular Infamous programming. As you know, This show is about the sort of foibles of the rich and famous. And this next story is about the thing that the rich and famous take as seriously as a heart attack. Getting their kids into college.
You said Harvard or Princeton or Georgetown, you know, what are those things?
Well, if you want to use my side door at Harvard, it's about 1.2 million.
Jesus.
But if you want to go through the back door, Harvard's asking for 45 million.
He goes, oh, well, you know, is she athletically involved in any way? Is she a star athlete? And my mom says, this girl can't play anything. She's terrible at athletics. And he kind of just said, oh, it won't be a problem.
And we got a search warrant for Rick's computer for his Gmail.
Yeah.
Which was a bonanza of crime. I thought it would be like third page of the Metro section or something like that. I had no idea that it would like blow up.